This is episode number 89 of the Social Media Church Podcast, the place for conversations with church leaders about social media. I'm your host, DJ Chuang, and thank you for tuning in to a special edition of the Social Media Church Podcast, recorded before a live streaming audience on Google Plus Hangout on Air. This episode is all about YouTube for churches. And on the other side of the recording, I'll give you some behind-the-scenes debrief and commentary. Welcome to a live edition of the Social Media Church Podcast. Today, I'm joined with Sean Cannell of SeanCannell.com and YouTubeForChurches.com and a bunch of other .coms and YouTube channels. And we are here to talk about YouTube and why are churches not on there and how Sean is looking to make a difference with that. But let's first get to know Sean a little bit. He's part of the Church OC, which is connected to the Church LV, and he's been doing media for I don't know how long, but let's find out. Sean, thanks for joining me on the Social Media Church Podcast.
Man, DJ, it's so good to be here, and I just appreciate, you know, being seeing what you're doing, being a part of it. Man, I love Social Media Church and all the stuff that you guys are sharing and all the great interviews and stuff. So it's just awesome to be here.
Great. So tell us about how you got into your role as a communication director and now campus pastor of Church OC.
Man, it's been a windy road. And I think one time I saw this post by Ken Meyer of we think, you know, success is a straight line, but it's just really this muddled clump of you have no idea what's going on. And I feel like that's kind of my story. Like 2003, actually, the co-founder of Think International, Jeff Moores, was my youth pastor. And he handed me a camera. It was a DV camera with DV tapes in those days. And he gave me some software, Adobe Premiere, back in 2003. And he said, start making videos for our youth ministry. And so just self-taught, just started doing it. After a few years, I came on really part-time at the church that we were at, about an hour north of Seattle, Washington. And then you fast forward later to kind of grew in those staff roles. Eventually, we launched out. We did Think International and started doing a lot of YouTube content, a lot of online video. And then eventually, he moves down to North Coast Church with Larry Osborne. And I found my way over to Las Vegas with Benny Perez and became a director of communications. And the social media side of things is kind of, I think, like a lot of people's stories. It's so new. It's such a brand new thing that just kind of worked my way into it over the years and then discovered this passion for YouTube. I mean, I think in 2007, I started saying like, wow, this is amazing. This is going to be huge, and kind of was dabbling in it. And now I've seen that it has the power and potential for ministries, for pastors, for author speakers, and for churches to really make a difference and reach your message further and faster than ever before.
Well, and welcome all the viewers that are joining us on the Google Plus Hangout on Air, and I'm going to turn on the Q&A button in a minute because we're going to spend the whole almost an hour talk about YouTube. And as a communication director, Sean Cannell has been a huge part of getting the Church LV Las Vegas online with social media, and they've got at least two YouTube channels that I'm aware of, and certainly they're very active on other social media channels as well. And I believe they have a online campus too.
That's correct.
So there's a lot we could talk about, but I do want to focus our time on YouTube. So tell us about the strategy that you were able to roll out on YouTube with Church LV and Church OC.
Well, for YouTube, I think the number one thing that churches can start doing is that YouTube is really going to increase your discoverability. YouTube is the second largest search engine in the world, meaning people are going there and asking questions just like they are at Google, and only second to Google. And it's owned by Google. YouTube's owned by Google. Therefore, it really is favored when it comes to search and discovery. So one of the initial things I realized was that YouTube is the best place online to post your video content, whether it be messages, whether it be your video announcements, whether it be, you know, anything any videos you create. And then the key being to put in key search terms for your local region so that people could discover your church. And so thinking about, you know, what are people going to search? They're going to search churches in Las Vegas or churches in Henderson or good churches in Henderson or whatever. So initially that was our strategy. We were just creating church news and weekly church video announcements. And they kind of have a fun vibe. They kind of have a, you know, kind of a cool vibe, but they're just informational. But instead of just titling them Church News Episode 1 or worse than that, 076.mp4, which a lot of people just, they don't, you know, take the intentionality and the time to do that. We started getting a lot of traffic from people doing those search terms. Because as you know, almost, I think, over 6 out of 10 people are now discovering churches from their website, from online search. And so having a presence there is huge. So that was kind of our initial strategy, is like, let's take the content we're already creating and let's optimize it and reverse engineer it so that people could discover us, maybe find a church news, but say, hey, what's the deal with this church, and find their way back to our website. So we started to see our traffic increase. We started seeing that when we were posting video messages of our lead pastor, Pastor Benny Perez, on Vimeo, that it wasn't getting as much traffic as it was on YouTube. Because again, once we tag it right, once we put a lot of relevant terms and a really good description, tags, a great title, we started seeing that go up, as well as the social sharing element of YouTube. So many integrated social media share buttons. The ability to, if people are interacting and you're getting comments and likes, that's going to increase your ranking and help it spread further. And so that was our initial strategy, is to get our content there and get it optimized right. And we saw it increase our website traffic. We saw it increase our discoverability and help us just get out there more with the content we were producing.
Now, YouTube has statistics, but it's like kind of buried. So how do you monitor that to know that you're successful with your keywords and discoverability and raising awareness?
Well, that's a good question. Analytics is a hugely powerful part, of course, of YouTube. And so you can check in there and you can see where your traffic's coming from and where it's going. So that's a hugely powerful one. But I think the biggest thing for us is to literally practically monitor Google searches and YouTube searches to see where we show up. On Google, there's the two switches. There's the personal results, and then there's like the non-personal global results. And so that's where you want to be, because you could get a skewed mind and be like, hey, our website's number one. And the only reason it's number one is because Google knows that you go there all the time or you're part of it. And so turning that off and seeing how our website is ranking in a practical way, and then seeing those search terms in YouTube to see, hey, are we getting on the first page? Are we in the second page? And we've applied that to different things. Like we have conferences, a leadership conference. And when you search the church conference, I believe we're the first or second result, and we're a lot of the results on the first page. So I want to reverse engineer now the audience we're trying to reach, whether church leaders or whether people that are looking for a church or just looking to try out a church and discover it, and put myself in their shoes, type in the searches that they would do, and see where we're at with the results.
Very cool. And you've captured some of those learnings in 2 ebooks, or at least 2 I'm aware of, and you probably have a printed one too. So tell us about the 17 secrets. Well, you've already given a few of those secrets already. 17 secrets to growing an audience on YouTube, I think is the title.
Yes.
And then you have another one called YouTube for Churches.
YouTube for Churches, yep, yep. So, it's the 17 secrets, and I probably can't think of all of them off the top of my head, but you can download it entirely. Secrets. And really, more than anything, these are optimization tweaks. These are about 15 of them are the ranking factors of YouTube. So it's, if you know them, then you can start thinking, this is how my videos is going to increase in the ranking. So number one, you know, a optimized tag or an optimized title rather. And so bloggers certainly know this, or people using Twitter or Facebook, they know that they have to get good at writing copy. They want to get good at writing headlines or get good at writing, you know, micro blogging content for Twitter that provokes a response, that provokes an action, and that can be reverse engineered for search. And so when your headline, you start thinking about it could be, you know, Pastor Sam, you know, Sermon 2 in the Hope series, or it could be, you know, how to overcome despair. And that's going to be much more relevant than just this very practical what, as opposed to a why or some of those things. So I list out a few tips under there. And then in the description, what a lot of people, I see this all the time, DJ. I see people that literally use about 1 to 2 lines in their YouTube description, not realizing that I have never, in my personal experience, even hit a max of what you could include in your YouTube description. And Google, YouTube, they can't search what you're saying in your video, at least yet. But they can search the text. Now you have this opportunity to even put a transcript down there. But then there's kind of like this, I know no one's going to look at it, but I know someone who is looking at it, it's Google. And that's the only way they're going to determine what content is in that video. And so really getting, optimizing your content in the description and then figuring out the tags piece. So all of those tips are in there. But then we go into ranking factors, like if your videos are getting likes or even dislikes, both are positive because what it shows is that people care. So it's fine to get either or. It's not actually pushing it down. It's telling YouTube people are engaged with this content. And so even if you're getting dislikes and it's kind of provocative and polarizing, still a good thing. And things like if people do video responses to your videos or if they're commenting on your videos. And then a few other tips to just really get your content out there. So those are great. It's like a checklist. It's a cheat sheet. You can just jump right in. Apply those to everything you're doing on YouTube. And one other thought is that if people want to go to either our Church LV channels or the Church OC channels or even the Think International or some of those things, which I believe you posted a lot of that in like the show notes, just go into the YouTube descriptions that I write and just steal everything. Just take the idea. Like just you can see the format. I've been working on this for literally 7 years, always optimizing it. And a lot of times, what I'll do is I'll post a video, and I'll be honest, I share this in the YouTube for Churches training course, that when someone's done with the video, they put so much energy out, they're kind of tired at that point. They want to put it on YouTube and just see what happens and stop. Right in that point, I might spend not necessarily a ton of time, sometimes maybe 5 minutes, sometimes 30 minutes, researching and optimizing that description. Because what I care about is the fact that once that's done and it's done right, it's potentially going to get views, discovery, reach more people, spread further over the next 3 months, 6 months, over the next year. Mm. And if it's working for you a year later, it's worth the 30 minutes that you invested to get it optimized correctly for that video that just takes off and really brings a lot of awareness to your church or your ministry or whatever it is you're doing.
Wow, that's genius. That is the long tail effect. A small investment of time and energy for long-term results. And that's something that it's a whole new category of thinking. It's not just return on investment for the short term. It's for the long term. So great thought there. We've got a bunch of viewers online. Thank you for tuning in. I wasn't able to turn on the Q&A button in time because Google Hangout on Air is constantly adjusting its user interface. But add a comment on the event page, and we'll get to all your questions in just a moment. But I think the question that people really want to know is, how do you create a viral video?
Oh, that's a phenomenal question. And I share that in my secret underground course that is $1 million a person. No, I mean, if I knew how to create viral videos, then I would probably be doing something else than I'm doing. And that's one of the things I love is that it's really, I think, two things. Number one, I think that there are attributes of viral videos that are important to study and to try and to include. But I think if the mentality is we just want to get a viral video, it's flawed thinking. And that's kind of this idea that a lot of times we kind of want that overnight success. We don't want all the long, hard work that it takes to just build something solid, a really solid brand, a really solid, content over the long haul. We just want to knock it out of the park. With just one video or something like that. So what I think is, and I've seen this, and I work with different YouTubers and stuff, not in the church world, that are influencers on YouTube, and that's their full-time job. And we see this principle across YouTube, is that you'll create a lot of videos, and if you're diligent and disciplined to use the best practices consistently, what you'll find is you'll create a video that you thought was going to be the next golden ticket. Just it's a magical video, and it's just going to go up and go viral, and it doesn't, and you leave discouraged. But then what you'll find is there'll be the one video that you're like, my goodness, that's getting 100 views every month, or that's getting 1,000 views every month, and it just keeps going, and it's kind of you know, you're not even sure why. But what you did was you applied best practices consistently, and every once in a while there's those small percentage of videos that are the ones that succeed. So what that tells me is that churches need to be consistent and diligent in doing the best practices. If it's a message from your pastor, if you're really optimizing all of his sermons, there could be that one that really hits the note and is the one that just begins to spread. And so I would start with, you know, those 17 secrets in that book and just applying those, diligently applying the best practices to videos. And then I think the next thing on creating a viral video is that we have to, this is one of my passions, DJ, is that there's the message side of things, like mm-hmm. sermons. There's the church news side of things. Mm. But I think that churches are some of, and church leaders, and those even watching this call, are some of the most creative, inspired. They've got the Holy Spirit. They've got, you know, the Word of God. They've got the best story ever told. And they can, as a church and as a community in our individual churches, we can share that story, the gospel, the good news, in creative ways. And I think about, you know, Jefferson Bethke, who did Why I Hate Religion and Love mm-hmm. Jesus, and just such a major video, 27 million views, and going up and starting a lot of conversations about Jesus. But it was a spoken word piece. Shot well. It was a piece of art, really. It was a creative piece, and it was provocative. It was polarizing, but it began to spread. And so I'm passionate about the people that are in the local church context thinking, how can we create content that isn't just necessarily, you know, the church baptisms are coming up, but that is telling stories, that is inspirational, or is provocative, or is asking questions. And those are the type of videos that are going to begin to spread. And those are the type of videos that I think begin to bring awareness to what a church is doing locally and when they create that kind of content.
Excellent. Let's get to some of the questions from our viewers. Wayne asks, Sean, what are some tricks to getting engagement on your church's YouTube videos?
Wayne, thanks for the question. You know, a couple things. Number one is, I think, be patient. You know, one of the biggest things that can be hard is we all want to put a video out there and get a million views. And honestly, it takes a long time. I think a couple things. You know, considering that even YouTube and social media, the church is usually a few years behind. And church members, you know, we sometimes can be a little bit late adopter when it comes to some of those technologies. So therefore, by you're almost ahead of the curve when you start applying best practices, staying consistent on YouTube. And I want to encourage you to just stay consistent doing these things and don't give up to get those results. Practically, the call to action is the biggest thing that you can mm-hmm. do. I work for a friend who does daily videos, inspirational teaching every single day. And he shoots a lot in a row. And so that way he's not shooting every day. He gets them lined up and he releases them every day. And he teaches some content and he's, you know, teaching biblical principles, all these things. And then it could be like a devotional that a pastor does or something. And one of the things we saw was that the video would just end and there wasn't a lot of likes or comments. So I said, here's what you just got to do. Is at the end, no crazy outro from After Effects. You could do that. But just verbally talk to the audience and say this. Hey, if you like this video, do me a favor. Hit that like button. And then leave a comment in the description below. And if you know somebody who you think this would encourage or inspire, share it with them. We saw his videos go from 3 likes to the next day, 26 likes. Like, wow. It just completely grew because the audience was like, oh, I should, you know, kind of engage right there. So just that call to action. How could you do that in a sermon message for your church? You could have maybe a host that comes on before the message starts and says, hey, you know, Pastor Sam's about to continue in our series on the book of Acts. And so thanks for checking out our YouTube channel. And hey, hit the subscribe button so you always see when we release new videos. And if there's somebody that you would you think would this message would encourage or inspire, use the share buttons on YouTube and then hit the like button and leave a comment or a question. We would love to connect with you there. And so it could be very quick. It could be very efficient, but very personal. I mean, social media, we want it to be relational. And I think that's going to be more effective than maybe a big, you know, explosion and After Effects machine gun fire and crazy. Then it says subscribe now. You know, just kind of a very like just chilled out ask. And people will start to engage. Do that consistently, and you'll see it continue to grow over time.
Excellent counsel. Thank you. Jeff is watching, and Jeffrey Shepherd is watching, and he mentions that Saddleback Church is using YouTube, and I think they've been only at it under a year. So they're putting their sermon videos and announcement videos online. And if you know some of the unlisted links, you can watch some of the behind-the-scenes things. If you want to ping me at socialmediachurch.net, we'll maybe share that with you. Another question coming in from Armin. As a campus pastor, how do you balance the social media efforts with pastoral care? Why such a focus on YouTube? Is this in conjunction with other networks, or is YouTube your focus? Well, that's three questions, but if you can tackle some of those.
All right, what was the first question?
First question, how do you balance social media efforts with your pastoral care as a campus pastor?
That's a great question, and I think that's going to be unique in every context. You know, technically, in our organization, I'm still operating in very much the director of communications role, so try that on. You know, like we have a campus in Vegas, and this is a new site here in Orange County. And we have a team, and we're engaged in those different things. And to be first and foremost, I would say that balance is something I haven't achieved yet. This campus pastor role is we do video venue, so and I do a little bit of live teaching, but I don't have to do sermon prep. So that dimension is already a lot different than somebody who needs to spend maybe 5, 10, 15, 20 hours sermon prep. So you have that time. Great team, I think, raising up leaders on that practical side of things. But for me, I think a lot of pastors out there, you'll see, they kind of have some are big authors, you know, or they have a passion to write and write a lot of books. Some are bloggers, and I don't really blog that much. And YouTube is, I believe, not just a passion, but I even sense this kind of God nudge on it, this kind of calling on it, that I'm so passionate about this particular platform and that I feel like I have a message not just to share with church leaders, but that I'm passionate about impacting people, the gospel being shared on YouTube in a very major way. When I start looking at the power and potential of over a billion users on YouTube, I'm like, wow, who's reaching that digital mission field? Who's really going out there? And so I sense a calling to that, and that helps me. I think also we have we have a lot of creatives at our church here in Orange County, the video shooters, musicians, people that are doing different things. And I kind of like have a heart to pastor creatives and to get them engaged and get them involved. So a lot of what we do is collaborative. It's team effort. You can't do stuff by yourself. You know, teamwork makes the dream work. And so we have a lot of people helping, a lot of people around that share that same passion, that share that same vision. What was the other question, DJ?
Actually, you led right into it. It was why so much focus on YouTube? And do you have are you doing these YouTube videos in conjunction with another network, or is this just church? And actually, it is with another network. And one of your other efforts has been with Think Media International, where you do want to train up other leaders. And you've produced an incredible library of leadership and church training videos there on YouTube. How do you find the time to do that?
Yeah, Think International is – we kind of have a couple brands. We have Think International. Vision is training the next generation of church leaders and creatives. And then Think Media TV, two different YouTube channels, is really focused on cameras and tech and different things. Mm-hmm. And I've been through just different seasons of life. And so when that started, it wasn't even in Las Vegas and now Orange County, but I was that's a story for another time. And so there was more time. And now today there's less time. So there's the content there kind of goes up and down. And I will preach consistency all day long, but yet I know the challenges of creating content. And so we've done a few things. I think there's a lot of ways to repurpose content and partnerships and collaborations to help. I think that's critical. But yeah, a couple other networks. And, you know, the question is YouTube my main focus, or do I embrace other social networks? Absolutely. I think it's a holistic approach. But what I've noticed is that YouTube, I believe, is the most ignored and underrated social network by church leaders, because of course we focus on Facebook. I think that's where it is. That's the main one. That's where most church members are going to be. So we should focus there. Of course, Twitter has, you know, ROI and benefit. I think Instagram is huge because it's such a powerful way to share simple and powerful images and stories. And so it's a holistic approach, but I think having a YouTube strategy. And so from a campus pastor standpoint, let me just finish with this. Is that I think to be successful, I have to think about leadership. If I was trying to do it all, I would bottleneck and I would break. And so at some point, I think what it would start with for the leader is to at least have a vision, a passion to speak that, to declare that, to speak it into other people, and to continue to speak that inspiration when you maybe can't do it yourself. If you're holding the passion for it and you're sharing resources and you're building people and you're building leaders, what you'll see is that then they might emerge and be the ones to run with that vision. But a lot of times if we're silent about YouTube or we don't even begin talking about it or sowing the seeds, then it'll never grow and we won't ever, you know, see that impact that we want to on that channel.
Now, with what you've already done on YouTube for the churches that you serve, it doesn't look that hard to just take a copy of your sermon video and your announcements and put it online. So why are so few churches on YouTube? What are they afraid of?
DJ, I wish I knew. I know you asked what they're afraid of, and I think there are a couple things. I think YouTube's reputation, I think number one, and somebody's probably bound to ask this, is what do you say about how do you respond to the sketchy content or the different types of content that are out there on YouTube? And that's a phenomenal question and absolutely essential as church leaders that we would address. And I go into that in depth in the book, YouTube for Churches. But the short and simple is this, is that I think even just using the internet is pretty dangerous because there's a lot of things that people could discover, get into, you know, by being on those platforms. And so when I read the Gospels and I see what Jesus did, he said, you know, be in the world, but not of it. And he said, be, you know, as wise as what? Serpents, shrewd as doves, the reverse. Innocent as doves, wise as serpents. So he wants us to be have the innocent, but have wisdom as we navigate those platforms. And so I think churches don't go on there because they're just afraid of the backlash, afraid of things that are happening, afraid of maybe the trolls on the internet that are going to have negative comments. I say this, if that's a fear, if that's what you're experiencing, turn the comments off. You know, Mars Hill's done that on a lot of their videos because sometimes it can be so controversial, you immediately shut down any of that controversy by turning the comments off. And that's good to do in certain cases. What about recommended videos and some of those other things? What I recommend there is that YouTube is a free video hosting service. They are probably one of the best players. Like, it's going to work on the most devices. They keep their technology right on the cutting edge, bleeding edge. So they work a lot of places. You get unlimited. Eventually you upload, get your account legitimate. Now you can upload unlimited length and unlimited HD videos. So it's a great place to be, but you also could just take that content and embed it on your website. So if you want to promote and advertise just a place you can control, then keep people on your website. Embed the video on like a landing page or a sermon page or put a playlist there and turn off when you do the embed settings, you can turn off show related videos. And so now that the person is going to click the play button on your website and they will never leave as far as it depends upon you. I mean, they can do whatever they want, but they'll just watch the video there and they'll never see the sidebar videos or any of these other things. But still, I think make your video public, optimize it, because what YouTube provides the opportunity is what you promote when you send an email out that the sermon is live or something is just to your church and you're trying to kind of protect them. I think that's wise. But then there's still the discoverability aspect that if someone's surfing YouTube anyways and they land in your content, come on, more power to them. You're reaching more people. And so optimize your videos on YouTube. I've got a post coming out soon on the churchmediasucks.com blog, and it's Vimeo versus YouTube. And what are the benefits and so on and so forth. And a lot of churches go with Vimeo, and that post will go into more depth. But YouTube, I believe, wins when it comes to churches. Because it's about reaching people and it's where the people are. And that was Jesus's heart. So I think we should be where the people are as well.
Well, there you go. Good counsel. Samuel Higgins wants to get in touch with you, Sean, at some point because he's had some ideas on his heart. So we'll put in the show notes at socialmediachurch.net. You can go directly to him too at YouTube for Churches. And I'll wrap that up right after we're done here. We're actually recording this on Google Plus Hangout on the air, which is live streaming right to YouTube. There we go, YouTube for Churches. So this is a great technology for producing content very easily. Actually, there is a pastor down in South Carolina at Seacoast Church. His name is Greg Surratt, and he does a monthly hangout with conversations about pastoral topics, and those videos are posted online instantly. really easy, quick, streamlined workflow. And I know some of the videos that you produce, Shine, take some time and effort. So how much time would it take to produce indigenous YouTube content that's just not a video recording of a sermon or announcements? Give us a little behind the scenes look at that.
Yeah, that's a great question. And well, I think one thing that I have as a benefit is I kind of, you know, I started video in 2003 and then I landed here now in 2014. And there's a great book by Malcolm Gladwell called Outliers and Discover the 10,000 Hour Rule. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, once somebody's done something for 10,000 hours, they've kind of reached mastery and proficiency in that. And I'd say for me, my core competency, what it was video editing. And so I've been shooting and editing video, and I was doing weekly video announcements in 2003. We shot on a DV camera, on a DV tape. We then had to take that tape, put a FireWire cable in it, record it. YouTube wasn't even out yet. Record mm-hmm. it to a camera, capture it all, and then I would edit it. And then this is what we do. We would export the video back onto the DV tape. So we hit record and export Ooh. The video back to the DV tape, mm-hmm. then take it out, put it in a VHS tape, and click it into the one that made it larger. Some people watching this probably don't even know what I'm talking about. This is like the Stone Age. Right? And then put it into a VCR to play it Wednesday nights at our youth ministry. And we did that every week. And so that was 52 episodes a week. And then eventually the church started wanting video announcements, 2004, 2005. So now I'm doing youth video announcements and I'm training up a team. So I'm not as hands-on there, but I'm doing weekly video announcements. And then we do special videos and vision videos. And I'm personally the hands-on person. And so I'm doing at least 52 videos a year, plus probably another 25, plus another 52 that I'm overseeing year after year. And so what that developed, though, was massive, you know, lots of pain, lots of frustration, lots of mistakes, lots of horrible content. If you could look and find that somewhere, I don't want you to see it, some of that early stuff. So that kind of, though, positioned me now to where that it flows out pretty quick. So it's, you know, it's able for me to edit fast, to shoot fast, to train people. It's helped. That is one of the big challenges is, and people say, you know, video content's hard. You know, how do you create video content or how do you do that? And I think a couple of things is that you just have to start on a journey of learning. Just go slow. I mean, put yourself on a schedule to produce one video a month that's meaningful, that's powerful. And then what you find is after 12 years, you've done 12, you could probably double that the next year with the same amount of time because of everything you've learned. And when you go to YouTubeForChurches.com, there's and you get the free video series and stuff. I also time really helpful stuff for all the dimensions because it's not just the social media optimization, but how do we get better of our on-comp camera presence and train that team and what gear should we use and what videos and lighting and all those kinds of things. So I think don't give up, you know, get your hands in there. And then you said, how long does it take to, you know, create some of those mm-hmm. content? So what used to take me, you know, 10 hours, you know, then took 5 and now maybe takes 2. And one of the biggest things that I think would help a lot of the viewers watching is to think a lot more strategically with a lot more foresight when you're going to produce content. Mm. I've been in the days when we shoot church video announcements and we'd be thinking church is on Sunday. And for some reason we're shooting Saturday afternoon. We're editing Saturday night after I'm on tables at Red Robin. I'm staying to edit, but I was busy and I was only part-time, whatever, all those different things. But a lot of times it's a lack of foresight. I remember when I went to Lakewood Church, I was walking around hanging out with their media team, and they go, we shoot a month's worth of video announcements at a time. And I was like, wow. And then I started to meet other people who they're like, no, we shoot like a month and a half to 2 months at a time. We shoot 8 episodes. So for us, it's really important to have church members. We don't just want the core leaders. Mm-hmm. And I'm on the platform in the week, so I don't want to introduce, you know, now check out church news. And it goes from me to me. I never want that to happen. Mm-hmm. I want it to be, our church is multicultural, multigenerational. So we want church news to reflect that. And so what we'll do is we'll get people from our church and we'll get like 8 people all together and we'll shoot 8 different intros and outros and we'll look ahead. We have 4th of July. Our 4th of July news was already shot. Hey, happy 4th of July a couple weeks in advance. And what we found is that you just completely leveraged your time to get, say, all your church news done. So you're not doing the work by week. Let's say you got all your church news done for the month in 1 week. Now you have 3 weeks to do some other creative content. And so how can you stack and become more efficient in, with your content? You can save a lot of time. And then how can you batch process all the optimizing and tagging of those videos and get them ahead? I think that's very helpful. It helps you leverage your time and create more content.
Excellent. So you want to pass this video, this conversation along to your tech guy who can understand all that, because I didn't quite catch it.
Okay.
But you can always hit rewind. That's the beauty of recorded video, and help them to understand the workflow of batch processing and preparing these videos that can go a long way for your church, but also for YouTube. And we're going to dig around some other things that Sean is doing. My brain is just exploding with tons of questions, and we'd love to hear your questions. Those of you that are viewing here on Google Plus Hangout on Air, we'll be here for another 15 minutes, so add your questions and we'll get to them in just a second. Jeffrey Shepherd asks, how can church small groups use YouTube?
That's a great question. For us, we have a kind of Saddleback's idea. And Larry Osborne, North Coast, and different video curriculum and small groups and ways of doing small groups, all those greats have paved the way. And so we do curriculum, and we have DVDs that people take home, and they'll have the session, and a host introduces, and our pastor teaches for 10 minutes, and then we kick it, and we've got a little book, and it goes to discussion questions. And so digitizing that is a great way to go these days as well, because we'd encourage – it might be possible to get around in Starbucks with 2, 3 people, 4 people, put headphones on, watch the content, and then discuss it there right in the coffee shop. And so I think utilizing micro content or training and putting it out there, making it easy to get to for a small group leader, and then sharing that. I think we don't have to necessarily overproduce that. I think a pastor could literally just talk and share for 10 minutes and be the catalyst of teaching. Now that people could have smart TVs or smartphones or iPads or laptops, maybe start off the discussion in a small group, and the church could gather around that and then discuss it after that. I think that's a huge way small groups could use YouTube.
Excellent. And I just browsed your YouTube channel for the Church OC, and I see that one of your most popular videos is actually a cover song.
Yep.
Unstoppable Love by Kim Walker Smith, Jesus Culture cover. So how's that one becoming so popular?
You know, I was just reading some YouTube statistics last night, and by far the biggest amount of video content that And so I think that it's important for us as church leaders to consider that. We know that, of course, worship is such an integral part of our weekend experience, that people not only love worship and connect in worship and praise music, but that also there's that opportunity that people love it on their CDs, cars, MP3s, iTunes. They're watching videos and so on and so forth. So churches contributing to that, I think, is huge. And one thing that a lot will do that you'll see on YouTube, the way that people help get discovered now, is that if you ever want to create an EP or a worship album yourself, one of the best things you could do is do some covers to kind of those are the songs. People don't know you yet, but they know these songs. And so they start to discover you and throw out some unique arrangements on there. And you'll notice those are our Pastor Miguel from our church and his wife Abby are doing that song. And we actually we're fortunate enough to have an incredible media guy. So for that case, how do you create this content? I didn't create any of it. I'm actually at the end, and I just say, hey, it just kind of was birthed in my heart, and I shared the vision with some people who are creative, and then they just created it. So we had a great media guy. It was a team of 3 people. They shot it. And that helps kind of getting out there for the day. I don't know when we're going to do it, but someday we want to do an EP. And Pastor Miguel's a brilliant – he does brilliant arrangements, brilliant writing. And so I wanted him to say, hey, get started now. You know, start doing some things now. Start getting out there now, because even if it doesn't come out for 6 months to a year, we want to be taking action. We want to start, you know, kind of making those connections, growing our subscribers and getting out there on YouTube. So for when we do release that.
Very cool. And one of the things that I've been poking around trying to understand how churches can use YouTube is learning from examples. You know, the churches and even Christians who are exemplifying their faith on YouTube. And I was so delighted to see that you put together 2 very valuable lists, one of churches doing YouTube well and one of Christians doing YouTube. How did you dig all those up? Because YouTube is not exactly friendly to Christian and religion videos.
You're right. You know, I think one advantage I have is that I'm a little overly obsessed. And, you know, it's rather than YouTube is again, it's my passion. And so there's a lot of great people doing creating phenomenal content for churches and a lot of other areas. But I just absolutely love YouTube. And so I've been observing, watching, subscribing, interacting. I mean, I think that's a huge tip. If you want to just at least start dabbling YouTube, is to just go in and to start looking around, you know, to start being more of a listener than what even a creator at first, to try to absorb kind of what's happening. And so that's what I think I've been first. And I think I still am. I mean, I still am learning so much, I'm dreaming so much, but I don't feel like I'm creating or doing what I could. And some of those churches are. There's some phenomenal churches. So I found a lot of friends asking who are some Twitter conversations, who would you recommend? And I got great responses back. I was searching keywords and trying to see who ranked the highest and did different things and looking on different lists and then going in and checking out their church channels. And what's interesting is it's not necessarily the largest church that has the advantage. I think it's the church that is creative, that has the most the willingness to figure out the platform and to do it right. Just because someone has influence maybe in the tangible world and online is tangible well, that doesn't actually necessarily translate. Or just because they've got a lot of Facebook followers doesn't necessarily mean they have YouTube. And so there's some great churches doing that. And yeah, both those posters I think are in the show notes, and those are great to check out to get some inspiration and just go through church by church and get ideas for honoring volunteers in videos, like having volunteer highlight videos and having ideas for how to do event promos and testimonies and all these cool things that so many churches are doing.
Yeah, and one of the things that I've started doing, I'm helping launch a offsite venue of a church campus for Saddleback Church, and I'm getting more involved in social media. And one of the videos that we posted was the baptism video, just raw footage of a gal who's a recent UCI graduate and posted it online, and now it's getting some feature and eyeballs, and that story is able to carry on beyond UCI, even back to Hong Kong as she graduates and moves back home. One of the other churches that really inspires me is Mars Hill Church. They actually take sound bites from their sermons, and certainly they have a provocative communicator, so they have a compelling hot headline and thousands of views. And that's a unique way of repurposing existing content without having to do a lot of extra work to storyboard and create a whole nother production.
I thought of two things. Let me just share two tips. I thought one, I love what you said about that baptisms, because for us, some of the best content that I'm most passionate about is stuff in our local church. So Father's Day, we shot a video with kids from our church, and maybe about 10 kids, 15 kids, sharing different. It's funny, it's quirky, it's kind of got bloopers in it. But then we share that on Facebook that week, and of course, parents in the community love to engage with that. I mean, I think that's showing, sowing kind of value into your community, creating community, and then letting that dimension spread. We just did baptisms, and we did a little baptism recap video, and that becomes something so meaningful in someone's life. You know, if you can, any level, doesn't matter how good it is, if you can capture that moment for many people or a few people, post it on your YouTube channel, you know, just put it together the best you can. Excellence is doing the best that you can. And then putting it out there and sharing it, it's so meaningful. Our church just created, you know, a video that they'll remember forever and put it out there on our channel. And so they can do that as well. Thinking really, how is this about our community? You know, how is this fostering community, building community? And by having people from your church that are good on camera or whatever, putting them in church news, now they're a part of it. So someone's not just coming to watch the one announcer, but you've engaged the community. You're sharing church, and you're saying, you know, you're getting that diversity on camera, all those different things. That's probably one of my favorite things about YouTube and the power of creating community for churches.
Yeah, isn't that what baptism is about? It's a testimony and profession of faith. And what better place to make that profession than on YouTube, where billions of people are visiting every day anyways. Now, how about Christian videos? Which Christian videos do you subscribing to and stay in touch with? I know you've got a big list, but which one comes to mind right now?
Well, of course, off the top of my head, I think Jefferson Methke has got a great channel, creates great content. I think he's the one to study if you want to create creative content like that, because he gets that kind of like, hit the like button, subscribe, the way he does his thumbnails, the way he does his different things. He understands the YouTube community. And another one is Blind Meow. Maybe I'm not a lot know about them. They're a creative group, a couple brothers, and they create kind of almost like satire and provocative videos that are about faith, family, and values, but it kind of has like a satire, sarcastic kind of bent, but it really provokes these things. Incredibly produced, growing, and they're doing what's great is you can go to see their videos and look at the first ones, and now they've grown into their lighting looks cool and their editing is all slick, but back when they started, they just got started and they didn't quit, and I think they've got over 250 or 350,000 subscribers, and they're really influencing and impacting a lot of people. There's some phenomenal musicians out there, a lot of people doing spoken word type of content that I love. There's a worship collaboration channel that's doing some phenomenal worship videos and stuff. But yeah, just check out that, check the list out. I've got a new post. I didn't really go into the music dimension because people that are doing music or praise music or worship music, and not just a band that has music videos, but like kind of more on that, what we can relate to, having to kind of hustle and scrap our teams together and find some lighting stands and get it going. There's some people doing some phenomenal stuff on YouTube and in the Christian music arena, and that's going to be a new post. The best Christian music YouTubers or something like that will be coming out soon.
So awesome. Thank you for keeping an eye on that. Love that exhortation. Just get started. I was at a photo summit a couple of weeks ago, and they said the best camera you have is the one that's with you. And so we're producing content all the time in that sense. And so capture it, share it, and learn to be a storyteller as you tell stories. The one of my most interesting YouTube channel I've come across is a knife thrower Bible teacher guy from the Carolinas. I'll have to find that video for you.
You got to turn that on. That sounds amazing. That sounds awesome.
Well, give us a closing word. You've done so much to help young leaders. You're producing great content as training and mobilizing the next generation to think about leadership and expressing their faith online. What's next?
Well, you know, I think as we have talked about all these, kind of strategies and the details, and sometimes we can get overwhelmed with all that stuff, I think it's important that maybe we just take a step back. And I want to encourage anybody watching this, whether live or on the recording, to really dream big and to really think about the message that we have. I mean, about the greatest story ever told of Jesus Christ and the gospel and the good news. And that fact that literally the God who created the universe lives in you and he lives in me. And so he's a creative God. Therefore, we can be creative people. And so what would happen if we just kind of slowed down out of all the busyness and really began to dream big and think about what kind of stories could we tell? How can we creatively express the gospel and share it on YouTube with something that is going to impact people literally all around the world. It could be music or spoken word. It could be a drama and a short form video. It could be a direct to camera, kind of talking head type of a video shared in a creative way. It could be music. It could be animation. It could be so many different things. So dream big. I mean, literally dream big and think about who's at your church in your community that shares some of that same passion. You know, kind of one of the things that we sometimes fail, I love Tommy Barnett from the Dream Center. He says the gift is always in the house. He said God's provision is always in the house. And sometimes we don't see that, like you said, we do have a camera. The only camera we need is our iPhone or is our smartphone because we're doing HD video now. And then we realize that there is somebody who's got a passion for writing and creating content. You can help film it. There's somebody else that's got on-screen talent and that we'd be willing to see the gifts around us, those we could collaborate with. And then we could just get out there and experiment and really jump in. So dream big, go big. And if I can help in any way, you know, don't hesitate to reach out, youtubeforchurches.com or just on Twitter. Shoot me a question, any more questions, and I would love to just support. My passion is that those with a life-changing message would change more lives with that message. And so I want to expand what churches are creating. I want their messages to reach further, their content to reach further, to, you know, than ever before, utilizing technology and utilizing the tools that we have today with online. So
wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Thank you so much, Sean, for joining me here on the Social Media Church, a live podcast. Great conversation with a wonderful church leader on fire for God on YouTube. And you'll want to connect with him at YouTube for Churches. And I'll add more links in the show notes to the things that we talked about, as well as the things that were already there at socialmediachurch.net. And we'll continue the conversation here. We'll see you next week.
Special thanks to Sean Cannell for joining me here on the Social Media Church podcast live edition. We actually were sitting across from each other at his office and recorded this with about a dozen or so viewers, and it was a energetic, passionate conversation, and we really hope that more churches will make their presence known and findable on YouTube, because there's over 1 billion people watching YouTube videos every day. And I hope he addressed the fears that some of your church leaders may have, and that you would give permission to the creatives that already are in your church to make their voices and their creativity and their stories known on YouTube, so that God's word, living word, can be truly proclaimed everywhere, especially in YouTube land also. And I really wrestled with how to get this, episode produced and online, and I wanted to do it quick and even leave off the intro and outro and on my work and on the laptop with me. I just didn't have all the right parts software-wise to do that, and so I wound up coming home to the home office and doing it right here on my desktop and with GarageBand. And so taking a couple extra minutes to do it right can make a big difference in the long term. And so I heeded the counsel from Sean on producing it right and giving it that much more of a longer shelf life. So sometimes it is worth taking the extra time and doing it right, because it will have longer value down the road. Here at the Social Media Church podcast, we want to continue the conversations with church leaders about social media, and you, as a listener, you're probably connected to a church and or you are a church leader, whether that's a pastor, a volunteer leader, an elder, a deacon, whatever. I would love to hear from you and what you want to do on YouTube. And if you have any more questions, shoot it our way, or you can connect with Sean Cannell. We've put plenty of links in the show notes, and you can find those online at socialmediachurch.net. And you can certainly tweet in your comments on Twitter. Our handle is socialmediachurch. That's soc as in social, S-O-C, media, church, socialmediachurch. And, of course, we're on Facebook and other social media networks, and all the little icons and links are there at socialmediachurch.net. And I also want to thank the handful of people that have filled out our feedback survey on socialmediachurch.net. There's a little icon or a pop-up, depending on how you visit the site, asking you to fill in a quick survey to help me understand the audience that's coming by and how I can better serve you. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you who spread the word, listen, share, like, and subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever podcatching app that you use. So be generous, share the love, and tell people about socialmediachurch.net. I'll wrap up this episode here. Thank you for tuning in. And my name is DJ Chuang. Until next time, we'll stay connected online.